This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the first For Your Benefit radio show of 2020. And we're here with Phil Gardner, and Phil is a used to work for OPM, right?
I did. And 39 out of the last 41 years I did there.
And he's a knower of all things OPM. And he's kind enough to come in today, and we're going to talk about post-retirement employment for federal employees. My name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant. I don't have a clue what Phil talks about. And I think he said the same thing about me and taxes. But anyway, so it should be a great show. So Phil, coming out of the box, you have all these kind of questions I should ask. And we rehearsed this a little bit before. Just generally speaking, non-federal reemployment. So I'm a retired Fed and I want to work. But I don't want to work for the federal government, not for any other reason, but I just don't want to try private industry. Am I restricted in anything if I go to work for a company that maybe has close ties or maybe totally funded by contracts with Uncle?
No, not necessarily. So, like right now, I'm working for NITP. Okay, so I'm not in the federal sector for employment. I am a contractor. I worked for OPM. I worked with the retirement system. There was no bar to me. However, some types of employees may have restrictions on companies or what type of industries they can work for a certain period of time after they retire.
So, I mean, there's like a cooling off period?
Well, no, it's more like a trying to make sure people don't set up something unethical.
Okay, cozy relationship.
Cozy relationship. So, for instance, if I was a procurement officer and then retired, I might have restrictions to be able to work for any of the companies for which I had worked on contracts for. And I always tell people, if you're not sure whether you have any conflict of interest in any post-retirement endeavor you might consider, just check your ethics officer or your agency before you retire, or even most agencies will talk to you if you call them, even if you retired a year or two ago, if you call up for their ethics office and, you know, get some advice.
Okay, this is the accountant side of me asking the next question.
Okay.
How far off dead center can we go? In other words, I want to work for this company, but they do business with or they're a subsidiary of. I'd imagine there's more problems with a subsidiary of rather than a company that does business with.
So I think that's probably a fair question. Again, I always tell people, talk to your ethics officer, you know, just to make sure what the real parameters are. You know, of course, you can't go to work for a company for sure that you awarded a contract to, for instance. A subsidiary is probably the same. Just someone who happens to do business with that company, I don't think would matter. Again, ethics officer at the agency.
Does each agency have an ethics officer or just the bigger ones?
Each agency is supposed to have an ethics officer. They may have someone who covers multi-functions, but, you know, they might do EEO and ethics and travel.
See, I would think in today's world with somebody retires the opportunities and, you know, there's a piece of barbed wire in there somewhere where we think we're okay, but no, there's some relationship. And I guess the ethics officer would have an equally hard time trying to figure out how far down the chain of companies that's owned by this big one is this person going to work for. But anyway, I think check with the ethics officer. And is there a hierarchy, like, you know, you can contest things in court and then you can go here or there? So if it's not a contest, but you just say, I don't really understand, is there a higher level to go to?
I'm sure there is an appeal procedure, I would think so, if someone received an official ruling. And I think it might also depend on if they had to sign any sort of agreements or anything.
Okay. Well, and you know, people are leaving federal government. It's a large employer, so there are a large number of people leaving. And naturally, if they did want to work part-time, full-time, whatever it might be, they probably want to stay in their sphere of influence. Ooh, poor choice of words. Their knowledge base.
Well, I mean, I'm working with many of the same people that I worked with when I was at OPM. I was in agency outreach in the benefits officers training and development area, and I now have contact with some of those very same people that I used to work with and advise retirement-related matters. Now I'm in their agencies doing retirement training under a contract. There's no ethical problem whatsoever with that.
Good.
Good thing, right?
Yeah. Now
Ray
I feel
and a
better.
Few others would be in trouble.
I can go home now?
Yeah.
All righty. The question we talked about, the ethics officer, and then the bullet point two. Phil was kind enough to give me an outline. Generally, no effect of employment on annuity with two exceptions. So what would these exceptions be?
So one exception would be if you were a disability annuitant. You have a disability retirements aren't necessarily supposed to be permanent. If someone restores themselves to an earning capacity or is found medically recovered from their disability, they can get reinstated into the federal government, or they can find a federal job, right? So if you make in any calendar year, you make 80% or more of the salary for the position from which you retired from, you're going to be found you're going to be found restored to an earning capacity, which means you're going to continue to receive your annuity for 6 months, and then your annuity is going to be terminated, and you're now no longer a disability annuitant.
Okay. And with the baby boomers, maybe a good percent of them are already retired, but there are an awful lot of people going that way. In your experience, did you see a certain percent would want to come back to work with the federal government, and they maybe didn't like the restrictions, or they didn't like this, so they went to work for a contractor?
So I would have gone back as a reemployed annuitant if the opportunity had presented itself. I'd considered it. I don't know. I think I was just – in my case, I was ready for a change, and – not necessarily a change in what I do because I love teaching, but a change just out of the kind of that federal environment, feeling like I had a target on my back. And I think a lot of people probably feel like that, and they maybe don't like some office politics that are going on. And just I think people are now thinking more about retirement as not necessarily being the final destination, but just part of the ride, you know, where they retire from their position. They pick up something part-time or whatever. So now they still got some income. They still have some purpose, things to do, but they also have some free time. That's how I felt about it.
I think it works on the other side of the fence too, with regards to the non-federal sector. You get to a certain age and you go, you know, this is good, but I've been doing this for a while. And, you know, maybe the stress factor builds up a little bit, or it is time to do something else. And some people maybe stay on too long, and some people leave too early. So, I mean, that's a whole nother show when we talk about the psychology of retirement and whatnot. And I believe somebody's coming in the next few shows to talk about that and things relative to that. So in your experience, did you find anybody that said, Phil, don't do what I did by staying on either too long or leaving too early?
No, you know, I was, working for the retirement system, I had a lot of knowledge about, what my benefits would be. So I always knew at any given time approximately what I had to live on. I knew people who maybe the only people who would talk to me would say someone who would say don't retire too soon because you might not be ready for it. Well, I waited till I was 63 years old and I'd been eligible for 8 years before I retired. So but I did watch people stay on too long. I saw entirely too many people work until they were 70, late 70s, even mid-70s, and then get retired, pass away within a year or two of retirement. And I thought, you know what, so was it worth it? You know, and to me, I said, I'm not going to be that person.
Well, you're very active socially, too. Phil plays in a band.
I do.
Yes, he does. Very good band. And you take you take the proper time off away from teaching. You know, teaching's fun, but 5 days a week is.
I take some time off from band as well.
So what do you do?
What do I do? I play golf. I do antiques. My wife and I are kind of embarking on a, we're calling it re-redesigns, where we reinvent furniture or restore it, you know, try to keep things from going into the landfill and make a little money on the side.
Okay. I'm sorry, folks. I just took that. And it was it was not being nosy with his personal life. It was just, it was an add-on question.
It's okay, folks. There's life after retirement, believe me.
Okay. So we got a FERS annuitant, or FERS annuitants receiving the annual supplement are subject to Social Security. What is a supplement, and what's Social Security got to do with it?
Okay. So FERS employees who retire under non-reduced or unreduced immediate annuities, meaning annuities that commence within 30 days after you separate for retirement, if they retire at the MRA, minimum retirement age, which can be anywhere between 55 and 57, depending on their year of birth, they retire after their minimum retirement age, like with 30 years, or at age 60 with 20, those are the two main ones, they're eligible for this supplement, which is meant to approximate the value of their FERS service in a Social Security computation. And then it'll pay them that amount until the person turns 62 and is first eligible for Social Security.
So you see a lot of this. We teach at a fair number of law enforcement agencies, and they've already had this supplement talk before I get in there. But I, for the longest time, I go, why do you get this? And probably a bad question to ask, but generally they're very nice people. And they go, because we retire so early, we can't get to the other one until a long time from now, so we get a supplement. Am I right with that?
Yeah, the idea being FERS being a three-tier retirement program, your TSP, your Social Security, and your FERS retirement benefit, okay? So if you retire before age 62, which is the earliest you can get a non-disability Social Security payment, if you retire before 62, you're going to be missing a third of your three-tiered retirement system, the Social Security benefits. So this is meant to kind of bridge that gap between when you retire and when you first turn 62 and are first eligible.
Okay, so a supplement would then be paid via OPM, if you will. It's not from Social Security.
It is not a Social Security payment. It's based on a Social Security calculation,
right,
but it's paid by OPM as a monthly addition to their monthly annuity payment.
Okay, now the accountant side of me says, well, it's not Social Security, so you don't get all those tax-free benefits of Social Security, but whatever it is, it's nice to get. So it's a supplement designed to make somebody whole because they retired early.
Right. But then what it does do is limits their reemployment opportunities. Even though they can work any job they want to, they're subject to the same earnings limitations that Social Security benefits are subject to.
Really?
Yes. I mean, if they earn more than a specific amount for 2020, it's $18,240. As soon as they reach 18,240, for every dollar they receive, or $2 they receive above that amount, they lose $1 of their annuity supplement. Okay, so every April, OPM sends out a questionnaire asking people to tell them how much money they earned from their from employment or self-employment, and if the amount exceeds that maximum, 18,240 for this year, then this is going to be reported. So if they're going to, this year, for instance, if someone is going to get a report in April of their earnings from 2019, okay, and if it exceeded the 2019 amount, which is 17,640, then they're going to reduce their annuity supplement a dollar for every $2 they went over that amount effective July 1st of this year. So July 1st, the annuity would terminate, the supplement would reduce or terminate based on 2019 employment.
Okay, so we're January whatever today is the 6th.
Yeah.
So we'd look back how far into 2019.
It's a calendar, the full calendar year. However, someone retired in the calendar year, their earnings prior to retirement wouldn't count against the cap.
Okay, so then they would do that. They make this calculation, and then the supplement would be reduced?
Would be reduced or possibly even completely eliminated if the person made somewhere around 52,000, somewhere in there.
So is there, I take it here, this is the rule based on a dollar amount rather than anything else. So there's no, well, I'll wait till later to do X, Y, or Z.
No, it's based on the dollar amount.
Yeah. So it's based on something that happens, not something that could happen.
It is. Now, I'm sure, you know, there's stories of Social Security of people, earning right up to the Social Security earnings limit and then stopping to work for the year. Okay, so they never get their Social Security reduced, and I'm sure there's some people in the annuity supplement business doing that as well.
Okay. Andrew, the best engineer in the country, is telling us, you're 2 minutes over the time to stop for a break. So why don't we take a break and we'll listen to what the sponsor of the show, WEPA, can do for the listeners.
WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Federal open season is over, but there's never been a better time to reevaluate your life insurance coverage. Get life insurance for less with WEPA. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WEPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and costs up to 89% less than Fegley. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. Although open season is over, you can apply anytime for WEPA Group Term Life Insurance. See how much you could save by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here January 6th, 2020. I'm getting used to that.
Hey, the first show of the new decade, too.
The first show of the new decade. This is a very important show. All righty, with Phil Gardner. And Phil is a retired OPM, career OPM, right?
39 out of 41 years.
Wow.
Took a little two-year dip over at DOD and came back.
And Phil is kind enough to join NITP, and he teaches the benefits, Social Security side of the seminars. And we had worked our way through several questions, and now we come to, I think we just did the supplement.
Yep.
Okay. And then it's number three in my list of things to talk about that Phil gave me. Retirees receiving Social Security prior to their full retirement age will have the Social Security reduced by this earnings thing, right? And we talked about that. And you'd go, okay, so if my Social Security benefits go down, they only go down for a period of time until I don't work anymore.
Well, Social Security does it much in the same way OPM does. So if you are, so first, the full retirement age, that's somewhere between 65 and 67. Based on someone's year of birth. For instance, I was born in 1955, so Social Security says my full retirement age is 66 years and 2 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if I elect to start receiving my Social Security benefit prior to that, I'm going to first receive a reduced amount as early as age 62. A, the amount's going to be less than if I waited to my full retirement age, and B, I'm going to be subject to this earnings limitation where Social Security will reduce my Social Security benefit if I were to earn over those limits, so 17,640 for last year, and now to be 18,240 for this year. And up until the year you turn your full retirement age, you're subject to that dollar for $2. Every $2 you earn over that amount, the dollar reduction in your Social Security benefit, similar to the annuity supplement.
So in your travels doing these seminars, when you were with Uncle, or now that you're private side, are there people that go, really? I didn't know that.
Of course there are. I'm surprised. I'm often surprised how much some people know about their benefits and how completely clueless other people are. I've had many people, when I told them about the annuity supplement, they looked at me like this is the first time they'd ever heard that they get this extra, maybe what could be $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 a month as annuity supplements. So same thing with Social Security. People, what do you mean if I lose my Social Security if I work too much? So
it's the federal benefits are phenomenal, but the rules, if you don't know them, you could nick yourself. I'm not going to say you're going to trip and fall down, but it's a life decision or it's a life impact.
It is. So when we teach the Social Security portion of the benefits classes, we always tell people to talk about claiming strategies, meaning when do I claim that Social Security? Okay. And basically, if you take it at 62, if you take it at your full retirement age, 66, 67, whatever, or if you wait till age, postpone it to age 70 and take the maximum amount, by age 80, you're going to have received about the same amount of Social Security no matter when you took it. Unless when you took it at 62, you didn't weigh in the fact that you were still going to keep working and start reducing your Social Security benefit by the amount of your work, you know, if you exceed those limits, okay? So we always tell people things to consider. Do I plan to work? And if so, then you may consider not taking your Social Security at age 62 and waiting until you're no longer going to be exceeding these maximums or your full retirement age, when you're no longer subject to an earnings limitation.
All right, I always trip, and even today, full retirement age, to me, when I first heard it, well, how old is that person? It's not per person, it's per edict.
It's per date of birth.
Yeah.
Date of birth. So anyone born between 1946 and 1955, I think it is age 67. I was born in 55, so for me, it's 66 and 2 months. So anyone born, I think it's after 1970 or later, it's age 57, is that, or okay. 67 rather, is that full retirement age for Social Security.
So my friends, when they tell me I should be retired, they say something about full retirement, and I go, when's that? And then they go, what you just said, and I go, no, it's when I don't want to work anymore.
I don't know, full retirement sounds like maybe the day I'm no longer alive to me. But
all righty, so post-retirement employment with uncle. An annuitant may be reemployed in any position they qualify for. But is there an exception to that?
Well, so annuities generally don't terminate even if you get reemployed in the federal government, with just a couple of exceptions, okay? But what happens is, if you can apply for any job that you would have while you were still an active employee, and the fact that you're already retired doesn't mean they can't reemploy you. There are a couple restrictions. For instance, a primary position firefighter or law enforcement officer, okay, can't be reemployed in a primary position, primary or rigorous position. Again, they could come into a secondary position, which is like administrative, supervisory, or something in their field. Okay, but for the most part, any position you qualify for, the fact that you're an annuitant does not disqualify you from employment. It does make you an employee at the will of the agency, but as opposed to any career implication, but nevertheless, you can be brought into any position you qualify for.
So if I was a retired annuitant, and I didn't know any better, and I work full-time, after a year, two or three, do those years of service that I now earn, would that impact my annuity?
Potentially. So there's a general bar to receiving annuity and salary at the same time, a general bar. And the way the government works around that is a reemployed annuitant, their salary is reduced by the amount of their annuity. So they receive the total amount of their salary, but they receive it between their annuity and their salary. They don't get their annuity and salary, okay? And as long as they are reemployed in that salary offset, then they are back in the retirement system, okay? They're back making retirement contributions. They can go back into TSP and start contributing to TSP again, etc. So as long as you're reemployed in that manner, then you can earn additional annuity by having 1 year or more of continuous full-time reemployment in the federal government. That would get you what's called a supplemental annuity payable in addition to your annuity. If you did 5 years, you could actually get a new annuity right where they recompute your annuity as if you were retiring all over again. Okay, so that's the bonus of being able to be reemployed. Now, you're not going to earn more than your salary total. It's going to be your annuity. If your annuity was $30,000, your salary is $70,000, they're going to get $30,000 in annuity and $40,000 in salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there is a waiver of that offset requirement where you can receive your full salary and your full annuity. However, The trade-off is you're not an employee for retirement purposes. So even a CSRS employee would go back to Social Security only in their reemployment.
Mm-hmm.
They would receive both full annuity, full salary, but no credit for that period of service. They can't contribute to the retirement system. They can't. That means they can't make TSP contributions, and they're not going to earn any subsequent retirement. So two ways to get that offset. One is to have your agency request OPM, waive the salary offset because you're in a hard-to-fill position, hard to recruit, hard to retain. It involves national security or a national emergency. OPM approves the waiver, and you can receive both salary and annuity, but the trade-off being no retirement credit. The other way is the Department of Defense has an automatic waiver provision where anyone reemployed in DOD is going to be automatically subject to that that off waiver, salary offset waiver provision, and therefore will have no additional retirement credit, et cetera.
Okay. Prior to coming to the show, of course, I read your outline, and as we talk, I got a question. And I don't think it's way out there. It's a little out there.
Let's see.
Somebody comes back as a reemployed annuitant. This person either was CSRS or wants to become CSRS when they come back. Do they have – if they were CSRS, do they come back as CSRS?
So if you were a CSRS retiree, you come back as a CSRS reemployed annuitant.
Okay.
Okay. You can elect – that person could elect, as long as they've been retired at least 3 days, they could elect into FERS instead,
mm-hmm.
and have that post-retirement service count towards FERS instead of CSRS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but there's no electing into CSRS. CSRS is a closed system, essentially, because you have to there's a few exceptions.
So an exception to everything.
CSRS is a closed system.
Okay, here's where I'm going. So I come back, I was CSRS, I come back as CSRS. I've saved, and now that I'm back at CSRS, I would like to put money into the voluntary contribution program. Now, again, I'm a reemployed annuitant, and I'm going to come back, and imagine there's a wait period, but I would like to be able then to put the money in that I couldn't put in earlier. And you're looking at me like, why did you ask me this?
I am looking at you like, why did I ask that? Because I don't happen to have a copy of Title V of the United States Code or the Code of Federal Regulations in front of me to see.
Okay.
I know when you retire with a voluntary contribution account,
mm-hmm.
you have to elect to cash it out, roll it over.
Into a Roth IRA.
Into the Roth IRA or take it as additional annuity, which is not a great investment. Can a person then recontribute? I'm going to have to – is it a cardinal sin for a guest to say, I'm not sure?
I don't think you've ever said that before, but if anybody's earned the right to ask a question or answer it later, it's you. So
my answer would be I'd have to read both five – United States Code and five Code of Federal Regulations to see for sure whether once you've received a payout from voluntary contributions, if you can go back into it or not.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat. I'd imagine if it is, and all I'm doing is guessing here, that it would be a time period so somebody doesn't come back for a month and then leave again. So there's probably some.
Folks, I wish you could see the smile on Bob's face as he realized he stumped me.
Oh, I don't try to stump anybody. This is my head working that doesn't understand what you do. So. And you know, I never cheat, but I'm paid to think aggressively.
I never answer a question affirmatively or negatively unless I know 100% the answer. So sometimes I have to get back to my classes when they stump me with one.
Well, see, then you'd learn more.
I'm always learning more. Well, I learn more by the questions people ask me in my. Seminars, and then I say, I'm not going to get caught by that question again, and I make sure I got it the next time someone asks me.
All righty. I got Roman numeral 5 here. It says, the annuity of a CSRS DSR retiree is terminated upon reemployment, not excluded from retirement. What does that mean?
That means, so first of all, DSR, that stands for Discontinued Service Retirement. And that means you retired based on an involuntary separation, not for charges of misconduct. So reduction in force, relocation of an agency, abolishment of your position, and you qualified for an early retirement under CSRS. That person, if they're reemployed again in a position where they're not excluded from retirement coverage, that annuity they were receiving is going to terminate upon reemployment. Now, they're going to be eligible for something later, either reinstatement if they don't work that long, or a new annuity right, or possibly a deferred annuity, depending on the circumstances. So if they did lose that retirement, they would get an opportunity to either get it back or get a new retirement.
Okay, now that might be Roman numeral 6, folks, of Phil's outline. The annuity of a disability retiree is terminated based on administrative recovery. What does that mean?
Ah, that's a good one, huh? So a disability annuitant can be found medically recovered based on medical evidence. OPM is determined if someone can be reemployed at the same grade or pay and tenure, meaning career appointment. And if they retired full-time, it's a full-time position. So if in other words, if you can be reemployed in the same pay that you were receiving or the current pay for the position you were receiving when you retired, that's sort of prima facie evidence of a recovery if this happens prior to age 60.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's called an administrative recovery finding. So it's not for earning 80%, restoring yourself to an earning capacity. This is where you're actually reemployed at the exact same pay, current pay of the position from which you retired. Okay, so they make what's called an administrative recovery finding. So it's not medically recovered. They haven't looked at medical evidence to determine you're recovered, but they're taking the fact that you've been reemployed like that as prima facie evidence of a recovery.
Okay, good. I think we touched on this. Social Security earnings limitations apply to those receiving the annuity supplement or Social Security. Didn't we touch on that?
We did, but it's just to note that even going back to work in the federal government and having your salary offset by annuity and all that can cause termination or reduction or even termination of your annuity supplement. That's all that was meant to mean.
Okay. We're going to talk about annuity earned during salary offset reemployment. But, Andrew, it's probably a good time to take a break here, and then we'll come back. And during the break, we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're in the closing 15, 20 minutes of the January 6, 2020 show, and we're here with Phil Gardner talking an awful lot about really things I think people wouldn't normally know, so it would apply those to, I guess, CSRS. There was a couple comments towards FERS, but it's really CSRS-centric, isn't it?
Yeah, FERS annuities essentially never terminate, with the exception of the recovery or restored earning capacity of a disability annuitant. So once you've retired under FERS, non-disability, you're essentially retiree for life, and any time you'd be reemployed, it would be as a reemployed annuitant if you're reemployed in the federal government.
Okay. Annuity earned during salary offset reemployment. What's that mean?
Actually, I should have probably said annuity earned following salary offset reemployment. So the key being, once you've separated from reemployment, we're a position where your salary was offset by the amount of your annuity. When you separate from that position, you're going to have had retirement contributions withheld, so you're going to be eligible for one of three things. So if you worked for one continuous year of full-time reemployment, or if it was part-time, the full-time equivalent, meaning if you were reemployed part-time at a 50% tour, it would take 2 years to have 1 year of continuous full-time. But if you're full-time, it would take 1 year to have 1 year of continuous full-time reemployment. So if you have at least 1 year continuous full-time reemployment, then you're eligible once you separate for the supplemental annuity that then gets added to your monthly benefit that you're already receiving. Okay? And it's based on the length of your reemployment. So, for instance, if you're reemployed for 2 years, they would your average salary, just like you had an average salary for your regular annuity, would be your salary earned for that 2 years of reemployment. You would get 2 years of credit. So a FERS employee who was at the 1% would get 2% of their average salary as an annuity, as a supplemental annuity.
I mean, how good is that?
It's great. Yeah. I mean, to be able to know that as you if you go back to work for the federal government, you can increase your benefit.
So, you know, I live in the private sector, and for 35 years of doing these shows and doing the talks and whatnot, I go, why didn't I go into the federal government?
My wife says that all the time.
Yeah. And I find, you know, when I do the class, you've already come in, and maybe I'll talk about something with regards to the thrift, but they'll say, you know, Phil said something like this, or Tammy said something, or Bob said something. And I go, well, yeah, that's what they do.
That's what they do, yeah, exactly.
But we always follow up and give the people an answer. So now, annuity earned during salary offset reemployment. So we've retired under whatever, right? And now we've reemployed as
reemployed under the federal government as a reemployed annuitant mm-hmm. for 2 years. And now you separate. You said, Okay, I'm done here. And so you're going to get additional benefits based on that 2 years you were reemployed.
So would they be the same formula as if I never did retire?
No, it's based on the formula, the step of the formula where you were. So if you retired at age 62 with 20 years of service and you got the 1.1% in your regular annuity, mm-hmm. your supplemental annuity would get it as well.
Okay, so
two years would be 2.2% instead of 2%.
That's pretty nice, though. I mean, the compensation levels are certainly agreeable. Otherwise, we wouldn't go back to work.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. And then we get a bump up in the annuity. I'm reasonably certain the private industry doesn't offer that to everybody. It may be, yeah.
Well, for instance, though, when you go back to work and you're already receiving Social Security, you get eventually some sort of recomputation for additional work under Social Security as well. So in that respect, and the fact that private industry people are can receive Social Security benefits, it is possible for reemployment to get additional benefits, at least under the Social Security program too.
Okay, so following reemployment of 5 consecutive years, I'm just reading off of here, of full-time employment or part-time equivalent of 5 years, earns a redetermined annuity. Now, you've talked about that. Annuity right is if retiring again.
Exactly. So if you came back as a reemployed annuitant, had the 5 years full-time, continuous full-time reemployment, or the full-time equivalent, you would be given the election between the supplemental annuity based on 5 years, which would be, if you were a FERS employee retired prior to age 62, it would be 5% of your salary, of your reemployment for that 5 years, so the average salary over that five-year period. Or if your regular annuity plus that was less, you could elect to get this redetermined annuity where you got a new high three, you know, based on your highest 3 years, wherever they fell, presumably at the end of the reemployment. You get those 5 years added to the 30 years you first retired with. So now you have 35 years. You get a new annuity right. You get new elections. You could rethink your survivor election. You could make a deposit election if you never made it before.
What's a deposit?
A deposit for your military service, for instance, or your non-FER service prior to 1989.
All right, and again, every time you say something, you know, the left side of my brain thinks, okay, I left federal service. Gee, I wish I had made a deposit for my military service, but I didn't do it. So if I rejoin or I'm reemployed, how long do I have to work? Let's say I make the redeposit, you know, 3 weeks later. Is there kind of like a window that says, no, you got to stay for at least a year?
Well, you have to have the 5 years to make the military deposits. I mean, or to be eligible. You have to have the new annuity right to be eligible to make the deposit election.
Okay, well, this is why I'm paid to think.
Yeah.
How do I never cheat, but how do I maximize the opportunities and not cheat? So thanks for setting me straight.
There you go.
So in class, I mean, you've taught the classes as an IT peer, but you also taught when you were in service.
Correct.
All right. So let's look at both sides. What surprised you from some of the questions in class when you were teaching current employees of the federal government?
I mean, when I was working still at OPM?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So at OPM, mostly I worked with other agencies' benefits officers, so training those who do the work directly with the employees. But I did get opportunities to go out and talk directly with employees, for instance, maybe AFGE groups, NARF groups. I might go out and give presentations for OPM to NARFs, where I'm talking to actual federal employees. We did some law enforcement stuff down in Palm Beach, where we worked with federal law enforcement officers, so they could ask all these questions. And I was essentially directly training employees in those instances. So that prepared me to, you know, be training directly with federal employees in my post-retirement career here with NITP.
Okay. A little bit not the reverse of it, but what should people in your career, pre and post-federal, what questions do you get where you say to yourself, you didn't know that? I don't mean that in a condescending way. You just, you know, we all have certain assumptions that somebody, you know, that we're talking to knows X, Y, or Z. I'm surprised sometimes that people don't know the high three, the impact of doing X, Y, or Z on that. Anyway, so, but you have the boots on the ground in front of those people.
I do. So first, a lot of them, probably the one that surprises me the most are the first retirees who didn't realize they were going to get an annuity supplement if they retired prior to age 62. I thought that was common knowledge, and because it's talked so much about, because, you know, the administration a couple of years ago had talked about eliminating the annuity supplements. So I thought most people had knowledge of what these were. So it does surprise me when they don't know what the annuity supplement is, for instance. Some people weren't aware that they could go back as a re-employed annuitant with the federal government. You know, they thought, oh, wouldn't that stop my annuity if I do that? You know, so they said, when you're in the benefits business, like I've been for my entire career, 41 years, you know all this stuff, and you forget the fact that there's people out in the middle of nowhere working for the federal government that don't have regular access to all this information. And despite the agency's best efforts to counsel all their employees, they still don't know some things.
Yeah, you find that when you're on the road, when we do, you know, webinars, we don't necessarily know what state is there. So we usually say, you know, what states are we talking to? Because sometimes the state tax issues, taxes are never going to be primary. Benefits should be primary. Taxes are secondary. But then they get the whole Megillah, so to speak. So then after you and the other benefits folks get done, probably there's some aha moments in the class, and gee, I didn't know that. And then somebody will talk about finance, somebody will talk about tax, and it just prepares them or it enlightens them if they didn't know.
Sure. Well, and at times I touch on things that are probably the domain of the financial planners that follow me, and I always preface it with this, you know, maybe this is just my opinion or my thought, but you should ask, you know, a qualified financial planner that question, and I do remind them that they will have, you know, those types of folks in teaching in the seminar when they get to the TSP and the TSP and financial planning and tax planning segments.
Yeah, and is there anything that surprises you that somebody in a pre-retirement class, you know, didn't know? I mean, some of these things you talk about, redeposits, if I go back or I can buy time, do they go, huh, I can do that?
Yeah, I get that. I get a lot of people say, gosh, I wish I'd known I could have made this payment 20 years ago before all this interest you're talking about has tripled the amount I owe. I hear that. I hear people who had no idea that their sick leave was creditable towards their retirement. You know, because it used to be prior to 2009, FERS retirees did not get credit for their sick leave. Only CERS retirees did. Law changed in 2009, gave FERS annuitants the right to credit their sick leave for the first 5 years, only 50% of it. And then since 2014, FERS retirees have been crediting 100% of their sick leave as long as they retire on immediate annuity. They didn't know it.
They didn't know it. I hope they all know it now, but I'd imagine some don't.
Sometimes people will think they can buy additional credit with their annual leave, for instance. Hey, I've got this annual leave too. What can I do with that? I said, you're going to get it as a lump sum. There's no that's the law.
You know? What if you use it up, if you will? If my retirement date is the end of the year, but I'm going to go on leave in June 30, and I'll just burn it up, and then I'll come back. Does anybody say, no, you can't do that?
Technically, it's not legal. First of all, you'd be hard pressed to have enough annual leave to extend out much more than 5 or 6 weeks.
Okay.
It's definitely not proper to use sick leave that way, just to wait until you're retirement eligible. Does OPM look at the circumstances behind all these retirements? No. No, they don't. But the agencies are supposed to enforce those rules.
Okay, so I think I got the in-between the lines message as well. You know, maybe somebody has 200 hours. That's 5 weeks. So it isn't 5 months. And, you know, maybe 5 weeks gets them that much closer. They stay on anyway and go through the middle part of November and then and do it. But what you're telling me, too, is a nice idea, but you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to.
Okay. I want to stay on the right side of comments.
And in fact, there was a controller general decision that you had to be in a work status and duty status on your last day when you retire. Believe it or not.
Really?
Again, I don't think anyone's looking behind that. It's up to the agencies to police it.
All right. In all the years, we got what, 5 minutes, Andrew? No, 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Okay, Andrew. Sorry.
Ask me a 3-minute question.
I would be talking to noon if it wasn't for Andrew keeping me straight. What couple questions did you get over the years where you go, you can't say this, you didn't know this, or you just say to yourself, I thought this was common knowledge. Again, we're talking in a pre-retirement class.
Sure. Again, the sick leave thing, mm-hmm. the annuity supplement thing. The fact that they didn't know they could be reemployed. I mean, really, sometimes you'll say that and you'll see the light bulb go off on someone going, wait a minute, I can retire and then go back to work and earn additional annuity.
Yeah.
People will ask me, why in the world would someone want to be reemployed? They're retiring. I said, well, some people retire just to sort of, you know, mark their spot in the sand. I'm officially retired. If any law changes after this date, it doesn't affect the big chunk of my retirement. I've known people to do that when they got antsy about hearing about the high five, for instance, when that's been talked about for 30 years and never done.
Okay. How about somebody late mid-career? They should be looking at the landing strip at this point. Not that we're going to go right down, but what can they do if they got a few years to make up for something they shouldn't have done earlier?
Well, the TSP is always a great vehicle to use to the maximum extent possible. It's one of the few things you can actually control. You know, you can't control getting promotions and getting more money that way. You can't control earning a higher annuity without getting more service and without an average salary. But the TSP is, you can put that maximum amount in up to the TSP, up to the IRS rather, limit of $19,500 with that additional $6,000 for catch-up contributions for those that are 50 and over. That's the thing I tell people, that's the most impact you can do to increase your benefits after retirement, you know, because it's how much salary you have, how much service you have is not necessarily within your control. I mean, you have to keep working and working and working to earn more money.
Okay, now this is off subject. You're 41 years?
41 years.
All righty, and you worked hard and you enjoyed it. When was the time to call it quits?
So people will tell you when it's time to go, you'll know it. And one day I just knew it. I was supposed to work for one more year. I looked at my annuity net estimate and realized it was higher than my current net pay would be. And that's when it's time to pull the plug.
Really?
Yes.
Ever regret it?
I do not.
I knew you were going
to
say that.
And not to plug NITP, but it's been a great opportunity and a great experience doing these seminars for NITP.
It makes you feel good at the end of it, right?
Wouldn't trade it for anything. I feel like at the end of every day, I've helped some, you know, a whole room full of people.
Okay, so I ask you questions. What were some of the easiest questions you ever got? You thought, you don't know that?
How many different ways are you going to ask me that question, Bob?
Yeah.
Are you trying to get me to say something here? No.
Well, the landing strip has got another minute and a half, so I'm...
Yeah, here we go. Pulling on the rope now. Okay, I mean, again, I think I'm gonna answer it in a different way. What should instructors know about the kind of questions they're going to get? Instructors need to remember that they're experts in this field and the people that they're talking to are not, and that no question is stupid. For instance, I ask a question in my class every day when I teach. I say, how many people in the room are benefit specialists? And, of course, when no one raises their hand, I said, of course you're not, and you're not expected to be. And that's why you're here now to learn about what you can do to make a smoother retirement.
Perfect. Now we have a smooth exit. So Andrew says it's time. Phil, thank you. And I won't ask you the same question again.
Bob, it's been a pleasure as always.
All righty. Andrew, thank you. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.